And we'll jump right in here. I always start and really curious about or to learn more about your background, and then what in your background helped you to identify the opportunity to start SoundGard?
Sure. So, first off, I'll say thanks for having me on the podcast. Great to be here. So, SoundGard is the company I started about 3.5 years ago, and we actually ended up creating a soundproofing paint. And the way that it works, and then I'll kind of talk about how I got into this, is we are adding a dense coating or membrane over the drywall underneath the top coat and reducing the sound transmission that would then come through that wall. So what we're doing is we're increasing the STC rating of an interior shared wall. So the best opportunities for us are hotels, apartment buildings, condo buildings, office buildings, student housing, wherever a wall is separating to living spaces or to workspaces. Those walls are traditionally not good enough. The STC rating isn't as high as it should be. So now our product can go on those walls and help provide more privacy and whatnot. Now, how I jumped into it was literally 3.5 years ago, living in North Carolina in a townhouse with noisy neighbors on both sides of me, approached the landlord, asked him if he could do some soundproofing to the walls. At that time, I was running a software company, so I had no idea what soundproofing meant. I didn't know what wall construction was. I didn't know what paints and coatings were out there. He basically came back a couple weeks later and said, listen, this is going to be way too expensive to rip these walls apart. If you want to get out of your lease, I'll let you out of your lease, but I'm not spending any money on these walls. And I went back to running my software company for a couple more months, but it kept nagging at me. It felt like there should be an option for apartment owners or condo owners, or even landlords, that they can do something, kind of quick and easy and cheap. Not that our product's cheap, but at least less expensive than ripping walls apart. So I moved back to Massachusetts, started calling on paint chemists to see who could help me develop this formula, found a great group out of Connecticut. We started working on the formulations, spent about a year and a half, 20, 25 different formulations. Obviously, a lot of testing that has to go into each one of them, and then comparisons. And finally, we landed on the formula that we ended up taking to market about a year and a half ago.
Now, as I think that, shared common walls and the challenges with Noid is a problem that's old as commercial real estate.
Right.
I guess, how is the industry, whether that's apartments, hotels, condos, what was their approach to soundproofing before? Like, what was the old model or version of, creating some sound barriers?
So, there's been options out there for decades. It's just the better the wall you want to build, the more expensive it's going to cost you. And sometimes it's not just more expense, but it's also giving up more space, making the wall cavities larger so that you can put more insulation in there, or double drywall, or adding sound clips, resilient channel. These are all options that have been around for 20, 30, 40 years, but they add a lot of extra cost in the development process. And, everyone knows that when you're trying to put up an apartment building or condo building or hotel, every dollar matters. These GCs are always trying to cut costs. Architects are always working with a minimal budget. Even though 100 or 200 million sounds like a lot of money, it gets used up pretty quickly nowadays with the, building costs where they are. So now, 3.5 years ago when I started this product, I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't know anything about acoustics or wall construction or STC ratings. But now that we've done lab testing and, I become somewhat of an expert in soundproofing, the whole industry is, there's a lack of, I don't know if it's options, affordable options, but the two most common wall assemblies in the US are a wood stud wall assembly and a metal stud wall assembly. Typically anything over 4 stories is going metal stud. So your high rises are typically metal stud. A metal stud wall is certainly better than a wood stud wall. So in your suburbs, your 2-3 story apartment buildings, condo buildings, hotels, et cetera, are typically going to be stick built wood stud. A single layer drywall wood stud wall assembly with fiberglass insulation is only going to get you a 37 STC rating if tested in the lab, and then it's going to be even worse in the field because you can't replicate in the field what you did in the lab, because then you start to introduce outlets and floors and ceilings and all sorts of other, you know, issues. So even if you got a 37 in the lab, you'd be lucky to get a 32 or 33 STC in the field on a wood stud wall. And then a metal stud wall is going to test somewhere around 42 in the lab, but 3 to 5 points lower in the field if you're lucky. So then that's going to take you below 40. And then the ironic thing is the uniform building code says that an interior shared wall should be at 50 STC if tested in the lab and 45 if tested in the field. So the two most common wall assemblies in the US don't even meet the uniform building code. They don't even come close to the uniform building code, but nobody's out there enforcing this. No one's testing these walls, or at least no one from like the state or government is testing them to enforce the code. You know, building inspectors are obviously going in there and, you know, doing inspections, and obviously you have to pass, but they're not really looking. They're not looking at the STC ratings on the walls. I mean, they're testing, you know, they're looking for, you know, insulation, fire code, HVAC, electrical, you know, foundation, all that stuff. So the acoustical part of it is kind of just, it's left out from that equation. You know, sometimes you'll have the developers send in acoustical consultants to test the walls and floors to make sure that the GC had them built to spec. Because I've seen this blow up on a couple projects where, you know, the architects are designing a much better wall, a wall that is a 50 or even a 55 STC if tested in the lab, which might be double drywall, might be double insulation, might be staggered studs. I mean, it could be a lot of different things. But then the acoustical consultants come in and test that wall, and they get a 38 or a 39 or a 40. And that is a huge difference from where it was supposed to be. So sometimes these developers will literally rip these walls apart and find out why they are why these results are coming back so much lower than they should be. So in some of these cases, you know, where that GC doesn't want to have to rip those walls apart and start all over, which, I mean, could literally bankrupt them, now SoundGuard can be a, you know, sort of a retrofit solution for them.
Quickly, could you define STC rating for us?
Yep. So STC stands for sound transmission class. So every possible wall assembly that you could ever think of or ever design with any type of sheetrock or insulation or any of these other, you know, solutions that I've talked about has to be tested in the lab. So every wall assembly out there that you could ever imagine is going to have an STC rating as tested in the lab according to ASTM E90 standards. So we're using a company in Pennsylvania called Intertech that's doing our lab testing on the two different wall assemblies that I mentioned before, the wood stud and metal stud. So when an architect or designer is trying to put a wall together, and that either the brand that they're trying to stick with, like, so for instance, Marriott and Hilton, like, they do have guidelines for STC ratings. And then a lot of times they've actually done their own design work, and the architect or designer that's hired by the developer is really just taking those plans from Marriott or Hilton and tweaking them a little bit, you know, to kind of put their own spin on things. But a lot of these hotel brands are trying to get more strict with their STC ratings.
If I guess the question I come to somewhat is, if all of the inspection is focused on, you know, foundation, structural, and that most of the buildings or the walls in the way that they're constructed today aren't meeting the rating system, you know, why should anybody really care?
Well, I mean, then it comes down to, you know, the tenants, you know, whoever's buying the condo. You know, if you're a landlord of an apartment building and you have 250 units or 300 units and you're charging $2,000 or $3,000 a month, I mean, depending on where you are in the country and how big the unit is, you know, you don't want those units to ever be vacant, you know, unoccupied. You know, the higher you can keep your occupancy rate, the more you can keep tenants renewing their leases, the more money you're putting in your pocket. So, you know, if you bring in a tenant and you have thin walls and they can hear their neighbor and they're constantly being, you know, distracted or disturbed or just annoyed by the neighbor and their noise, then there's probably a very unlikely chance you're going to keep that tenant past their lease. So I would say that's one reason. I mean, you are theoretically increasing the revenue of your property by keeping your tenants in their units longer. And then that's less time that your leasing manager has to go try to find new tenants to fill open open apartments. You know, I think it works the same on the condo side. You know, if you're trying, whether you're the owner of the unit trying to sell it to someone new, if you can tell them that, you know, these walls are better and that there's a less likely chance that they're going to have an annoying neighbor, you know, maybe you can get a little bit more money for the unit. You know, same thing if you're a developer and you just put up a new 200, 300 unit luxury condo building, and those condo buyers in Boston or New York, or, you know, pick your city of choice, you know, they're out there looking at 5, 6, 7 different units, but your particular building has better walls. You know, that's one more, you know, amenity, I guess, if you want to call it that, that owner might gravitate towards. Because at the end of the day, I mean, when you're moving into a condo building or apartment building, you really have no idea who's going to be living next to you. You know, before you sign a lease or before you buy a condo, you're typically not interviewing the people that live next to you. So you really don't know if they have kids, do they have dogs, are they, you know, nighttime people, do they have lots of social parties, whatever the case might be, you're kind of walking into it unknown. So I think anything that these developers and building owners or managers can do to improve their walls, I think there's a, you know, a positive ripple effect from that.
And where do you find that, I guess, that you found the most traction today? Is it in the retrofit process, or have you been able to support new development from a cost perspective?
So as much as we would love to get into new construction projects, and there's definitely some value that we can add there, because our product is really just a primer, so you're still going to put your top coat over it, which means that, but because of that, we do replace the primer. So in new construction, you're going to put up your drywall, you know, you're going to tape the seams, mud the seams, sand the seams, et cetera, like you would always do. But then instead of having to put one or two coats of primer, you would just put three coats of SoundGuard and then put on your top coat like you would do normally. So we're actually reducing the cost of the labor and the cost of the primer, which, you know, is a value add. But even with that said, the bigger market for us and where we've seen the most traction so far is absolutely on the renovation and retrofit market. So hotels, when they're renovating, which is typically happening every 8 to 10 years, depending on the brand, you know, the volume of the hotel, et cetera, and then apartments as they're turning over units. So 200 units, you know, every month they might have 10 or 15 units that flip over. You know, those are the units that we would go into and apply our product to the shared walls before the next tenants came in a few days later. And then condos, you know, the challenge with condos is if you're not getting into the new construction part of it, if you're not in those specs, then you're essentially waiting for those units to be sold off to individual owners. And then you have to deal with the individual owners on a one-on-one basis, which obviously is not as ideal as doing the whole building up front. So we've really kind of stayed away from the condo market because it's almost more of that, you know, direct to consumer, one-on-one. Too much of a headache right now. You know, we're really looking for the more scalable opportunities, which is, you know, entire hotels or entire apartment complexes.
And I guess as, you know, hotels or apartments are going through the renovation process, you know, what is the decision-making process for those owners, you know, property managers look like? You know, what's the competition in the market for, you know, for you guys?
So I guess that's the beauty of this is in terms of renovation and retrofits, there really isn't any competition. I mean, there really aren't any other solutions that are even close to our price point that can add, you know, at least 5 or 6 STC points to a shared wall, because these properties are absolutely positively not going in there and ripping walls apart or adding additional layers of drywall. It's just way too expensive. So in many ways, the competition for us is the property just not doing anything about the walls and allocating that capital to something else in the project. You know, whether it's nicer beds or nicer carpet or nicer wallpaper or fancier lobby, you know, that's all stuff that's typically getting done in these renovations. So maybe rather than earmarking $300,000 to put SoundGuard on all the walls, they're putting that $300,000 towards something else. But in terms of, actually, I forget the beginning of the question, but, you know, with hotels, I mean, so we're talking to, I don't know, 9 or 10 hotels that are planning renovations over the next 4 to 9 months. And it's seasonal. So, you know, every hotel or most hotels are typically going to have a a slow season, whether it's the winter or the summer, you know, kind of depending on where they're located. So those are the months that they would be targeting the renovation. And some of these renovations get postponed. I mean, there was renovations that were supposed to happen last winter that are getting postponed till this coming winter because the economy has been so strong and the hotel market's been so strong that these hotels just don't want to take the rooms out of inventory. You know, they really need there to be a slowdown and occupancy rates to take a dip before they're willing to move forward with the renovations. So those are some, we have some big projects coming up, you know, 300, 400, 500 room hotels. And, you know, these are considerable revenue opportunities for us. Now, in terms of who we're targeting, so, you know, I learned this the hard way. Originally, I was going after the general manager or the director of engineering or the director of operations at these properties. And those are certainly still good people to target because they can be kind of allies and advocates for us. But at the end of the day, we also need to make sure that a decision maker is looped in on the process. So if I'm talking to the GM or the director of engineering at, you know, the Marriott in Seattle, I need to make sure that whatever hospitality group owns that property, someone from that, you know, kind of the C-suite team is involved with what we're doing. And typically that means we're going out to the property and we're taking two rooms out of inventory for a couple days and we're doing what we call a mock-up, which is really just a demo. So I go in there with my sound testing equipment. I do some sound testing on the walls, obviously record the results, and then we apply our product to both sides of the wall. And then 2 or 3 days later, we go back in and do more sound testing and then provide those reports back to whoever the decision maker on that project might be. And assuming that the results look good, assuming that they are, you know, prepared to include us in the upcoming renovation, you know, we would then work with their designer or architect to make sure that we're in the specs, which is, you know, what we've been doing for the last year. And we're in some of these specs coming up. And then when they get to the model room, we would obviously go out there and apply our product to the model room. And then typically a few months after that is when that renovation would start. And the renovation is obviously just replicating what that model room is.
So you've been at it for 3.5 years. What does, you know, kind of the current client base, you know, what does your footprint look like from a geography perspective? Can you just kind of tell us about your install base today?
Yeah, I mean, so the first two years was product development. So even though I say that I started the company 3.5 years ago, I mean, first two was developing the product, testing the product, filing all the intellectual property, you know, raising money from investors, hiring, all that stuff. So we've been in the market now for a little less than a year and a half. We've done some small projects, small office projects, a couple small boutique hotels, a couple apartment properties. But I will say, I mean, most of what we've done so far is mock-ups and pilot programs. So we've been doing, you know, we have some pilot programs up and running with some of your big apartment brands and your big hotel brands. And then as, you know, as we start to close out the summer, they'll be getting feedback from tenants, from hotel guests, as well as bringing in their own acoustical consultants to do testing. And then some of these pilot programs, we hope, lead to full installs. I would say there's probably 5 or 6 full installs that we'll get into between October and January. Once the slow season starts to, you know, take effect, we have properties in North Carolina, a couple in San Francisco, Austin, Texas, Houston, Kansas City. So we're in the specs for all of those upcoming renovations, and a couple of them are even new construction.
And what does success look like for SoundGuard over the next 12 months?
Oh, God. That's a good question. So, I mean, I still think that we are just at the very, very beginning of this. I mean, we have such a long ways to go. Recently, we did get approved as vendors for PPG and Sherwin-Williams, you know, the two biggest paint companies in the U.S. So working with them is obviously a massive opportunity for us. PPG has 800 corporate stores and another 2,000 independent dealers. Sherwin-Williams has 4,700. That's 4,700 company-owned stores. So, I mean, the reach and the just everything they can offer us is a huge opportunity. We've also gotten into the plug and play accelerator for building materials, which started last week in Silicon Valley. So I'll be out there every 2 to 3 weeks working with, you know, their investors, their mentors, their corporate partners. Sherwin-Williams is actually one of their main corporate partners. So I've already had conversations and sit downs with their external innovation team. So we're going to start working on some things together. And then there's some other building materials companies, construction companies, hospitality and multifamily groups that are also corporate partners at Plug and Play. So I'll have access to them as well. And then there are 32 global offices. So we have potential projects coming up in Europe, South Asia, Singapore. But I can't really jump into those yet until I have more, I don't know, raise more money, bigger team. So success, I mean, obviously we want to lock down and close these projects that we have in the pipeline, make sure we stay in the specs for these upcoming deals. But I mean, I think for us, I mean, the opportunities are endless. I mean, I really think that over the next couple of years, I mean, we should do millions of dollars worth of revenue if we can, you know, continue to grow the company, build our team, obviously raise more capital, like I said, because it is it's a pretty capital intensive process for us, you know, going out there and creating demand, educating the market, training contractors, you know, getting in front of all the big architects and designers and hosting luncheons and then going to all the conferences and getting tables. I mean, there's a lot to this. I mean, so far I've raised about $500,000, which has gotten us to where we are right now. But I mean, by no means is this the end of the capital raising for us.
Yeah, I guess. Could you talk about the next kind of round of capital raising that you're looking to do, and you know, the build out of the team, you know, what the evolution of the team looks like here in the near future?
So over the last year, we've raised $500,000 from 10 different angel investors. So these are individuals that are, some of them are strategic to us. You know, they're either in the construction business or they're in, you know, some other, you know, associated industry like insulation or hospitality. But I mean, certainly we have to raise another at least $500,000. I think we just need to raise enough capital over the next 6 to 8 weeks to get us through the winter when some of these deals should be coming through. And the deals are, you know, they should be, each deal should be very profitable to us. So I think we raise somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million over the next 2 to 3 months, which gets us through the winter into the spring. By then we should be able to fund our own operations from those cash flows. And I would say 80% of what we bring in terms of capital raising is probably going towards hiring and sales and marketing. It's really, you know, I need to have people on the ground in all the major markets, or at least the top 8 to 10 markets, which is Boston, New York, DC, LA, San Francisco, et cetera. You know, I need one person in each of those markets that, you know, really has a significant Rolodex with architects and designers and developers. Acoustical consultants and engineers are always a plus, but very few people have those connections. But, you know, so in addition to going out there and creating demand in these markets, they're also going to have to support our dealer partners, because we made the decision to really focus on the dealer channel as our, you know, sort of method of distribution. So, you know, in a couple cases here and there, we'll sell direct to a customer. If it's, you know, a small deal, you know, $15,000, $20,000, we probably won't worry about bringing in the dealers for that. It's just not worth their time. But on the bigger projects, which could be hundreds or even thousands of gallons of product, and it's either a new construction project or a huge renovation, you know, we really don't want to be selling direct in those instances. We don't want to be shipping, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 gallons to a job site all at once. So that's where we're going to bring in these dealer partners, which so far is PPG and Sherwin-Williams, to help us with the logistics and the financing. Because on a lot of these projects, the painting contractor is bidding on, you know, whatever line items they're bidding on. So you might have, you know, ABC painting contractor in Dallas that bids on applying SoundGuard and probably all the other paints and coatings that are part of that renovation. And assuming that they win the bid, you know, they're then going to go to one of our dealer partners and place a purchase order for 1,000 or 3,000 gallons of our product. And they're typically going to need to buy that product on credit. You know, they're not paying upfront for that product because they're going to have to wait to get paid back by the GC, which could be 30, 60, or 90 days. So we really need our dealer partners to help us provide financing for these big jobs as well.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you feel like is important for the listing audience to know? And then could you tell us if we're interested to learn more about the product or potentially have an opportunity, the best place to engage with you and your sales team?
So I'm not a first-time entrepreneur. I had a couple other startups before, but this is the first one that I ever raised capital for and had to do any significant hiring for. And I would say that I underestimated how difficult both of those things were going to be. I figured just because we had a really cool product and we were addressing a really big problem, and there was obviously unlimited opportunity, I thought the fundraising would be much, much easier. But I think angel investors have gotten very smart over the years, and I think they stick to what they know. They only invest in companies where they believe they can add value or they have some specific domain expertise. So the challenge for me was all the, you know, the tech investors that have made tons of money over the last decade really had no interest in our round. So then I had to kind of pivot my fundraising strategy and really go after, I guess, the people that could be more helpful to us, more strategic, you know, your real estate developers, maybe some of your big executives at architect and design firms or hospitality groups. So then I kind of jumped on that strategy and it's paid off to a certain extent. I mean, I have a couple investors in my seed round that have really added a lot of value. And then some others that really I don't talk to very often that really haven't followed through with their introductions and kind of value add as I was hoping. So I think as I move forward and I go to raise more capital, I think I'm going to stay away from the angel investors, the individuals that, you know, are putting in anywhere from 10,000 to 50,000 and really focus on more strategic, possibly like a corporate venture fund. You know, we're talking to four or five right now. I won't name them, but you know, these are massive 20, 30, $40 billion building materials companies, coatings companies that have venture funds and they do some strategic investments. I think they would probably be better investors going forward for us. And then how you can, and then just in terms of hiring, I mean, I think I screwed that up big time from the beginning. I think because I'm a solo founder and I was trying to do 50 things at once, I wasn't putting in enough time and effort into the recruiting. So I just wasn't talking to the right candidates. I wasn't screening or I wasn't sourcing enough candidates. I wasn't screening them properly, you know, really doing like a deep dive due diligence into their background and connections. So, you know, we've had a lot of turnover on the team, which is partly my fault and partly the fault of the people I hired for, you know, sort of misleading them or misleading me in what their, you know, skills and network look like. So it's a learning process. I mean, I think every entrepreneur, when they start something new in an industry or segment that really hasn't had much innovation, and, you know, products get adopted very slowly, you know, architects, designers, developers, builders, et cetera, they don't just throw new products into projects because they sound cool or look cool. I mean, there's a lot of testing and pilot programs that have to go into stuff, which I guess makes sense. But once you get through that, you know, then things really start to kind of, you know, domino in a good way. And then just in terms of how you can learn more about SoundGuard, so you can go to our website, which is soundguard.io. So that's SoundGuard.io. Feel free to reach out to me at any point. You can send a chat message through the website or email us at info@soundguard.io. And typically someone responds pretty quickly.